From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 818, Email Transport Security with guest Gareth Gudger, recorded Tuesday, February 15th, 2022. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hey, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back one of my regulars, Gareth Gudger, who's a Microsoft MVP specializing in Exchange and Office 365. He started his career back in 1999 on Windows NT4 and Exchange 5.5, the dark old days. And he blogs at supertechboy.com, which I regularly tweet out his blog posts because he's one of my favorite Exchange people. And somehow, we never got a show together in 2021, friend. How did that happen?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, Richard. It was a busy year, I guess, for me. I was doing a lot of projects, not to mention just adding additional projects. So in addition to the regular, I can't even call it an 8-to-5, because when you're an Exchange admin, it feels like change controls are always at, like, you know, 10 o'clock at night something like that. So aside from the regular day job and the side hustles, I'm also doing the I joined the 8th edition of the Office 365 for IT Pros book, which is a long running book that Tony Redmond has now been pioneering for 8 years, a constantly updating ebook on Office 365. So,
well, it's the impossible task, right, to actually have an up-to-date book on Office 365 for anybody. So, congratulations. It's almost like a 10-year thing, right? Like, how long can you do it for? Tony is an alien. I don't know how he just keeps going. But.
Yeah, I don't either, because he is on, he writes for so many different outlets, and then he's doing the book as well. I don't know how. He's not using Earth days. He's clearly on, like, whatever planet rotates slower. That's the hours of days that he gets.
Yeah, so. Magic Irish time. I don't know the answer to that. On our last show, which we published back in November of 2020, we were talking about the next version of Exchange, and I still want to talk about that because we haven't seen the next version of Exchange since 2019, it seems. We got a comment from one of my longtime listeners, Arnie Gardner, who called us out and really called me out. It's my job as a host to identify acronyms, and I didn't on that show. We talked about SPF, DLM, and DKIM. And admittedly, I did not call out that sender policy framework, SPF, data loss prevention, DLM, and DKIM being domain keys identified email or mail.
Yep.
Sorry, Arnie, but I'll make it up to you with a Run As Radio mug. How about that? And, hey, if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or on Facebook or LinkedIn. Each show publishes there as well. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, I'll send you a mug. You've got a mug, friend, I presume.
I do. I think I have the orange one. Part of me is like, you know, it needs to be like Pokemon. I've just got to catch them all now, because you've got all the...
There's 11.
It's all the old, what was it, Metro colors or something like that, right?
Yeah, the old color palette. When we were redesigning the website back in the day, the idea, it wasn't my idea. I liked the idea of making a very IT-centric website. I was almost going for like a Win 3.1 look, but that just really dates me. And as we're looking at different versions of Windows, the designer loved the Metro thing, which is nothing but painful feelings for all of us, right? but the whole color palette effect and the 8-bitification of people's pictures, that was the designer's insight. Because, you know, it's really tough when you're using people's headshots on a website to not make them look like an FBI lineup photo. But that takes that away, that 8-bitification on the website.
Yeah, I really like that look of the 8-bit. Resolution of that person. And, I've been dabbling a little bit on the side into retro computing again. So it's really cool to see that. And, I get your point. It just kind of becomes like a wall of mugshots like that.
And I'm guilty of it too, right? I've got professional headsets and so forth. But when you line them up on a website like that, like, yeah, it's just a, have you seen these people? So the Runaz site to this day, full of IT gags, like there are alt keys that work and there's all kinds of things. Like if you think my website is funny, you should probably listen to my show because it's the gags that I think IT people appreciate. And certainly that aesthetic, the color aesthetic and so forth, lend itself to the mugs and to clip art on the social media and so forth. I just think it, at least it looks distinct. There's so many things that look the same, but I think Runaz has its own distinct look.
Yeah, if you get all 11 mugs, you got to have some like special.
Yeah, I got to make a gold case. Mug.
Right. Ace to put them all in, and
well, I think I would make a 12th just to make it a proper dozen, right? Make a black like a black mug with gold lettering. I don't know. I've never done that.
just start selling like NFT versions of those mugs, and
oh, save me, God! What happens when the website goes down? Did anybody talk about that? Did you forget to renew the URL? Oh well.
Yep.
Well. I can't imagine we can talk about Exchange Server on-prem much because here we are in 2022 and I just see no sign of another on-prem Exchange Server.
Yeah. So, I think we spoke about this, I guess, in the last podcast back in 2020.
Right.
There was Microsoft had told us that we were getting a new version of Exchange. And on top of that, I believe there was going to be a new version of SharePoint and Skype for Business as well. And I haven't seen any of those. And those were supposed to drop, or at least there's supposed to be a public preview, Q4 of last year, of 2021, and it's just been absolute radio silence since then. And I know we've been dealing with, I'm sure there's been resourcing issues with the pandemic. There was also the Hafnium exploit, which I'm sure that, you know, all hands on deck for that.
Oh yeah,
and everything else got pushed back. So I'm sure there's plenty of things that have delayed that original date. But obviously, you know, here we are in Q1 and of 2022, and we still don't have any news on Exchange. So fingers crossed, it's still happening.
The number of pure hands on deck moments for IT folks in the past 18 months, I can't even. It's extraordinary, right? The log4j touched so many people, and it's not just a Java thing, you know. The Hafnium was catastrophic. My Exchange server dodged it by luck. Just some name redirection stuff that meant that the tester didn't work, but it still swept me. Which, by the way, I think I'm finally going to retire my Exchange server once and for all. Enough. I've moved everything, most everything to the M365. I did not do it in hybrid mode. I can turn mine off.
Well, so it's not the hybrid that's restricting you from getting rid of that last Exchange server. It's whether or not you're doing directory synchronization.
Yeah.
Which 99.99% of people are probably doing.
Absolutely.
And so that's what's actually really preventing you from getting rid of that last Exchange server. And we say preventing you, it's preventing you from being in a supported scenario.
Right.
There's certainly companies out there that have gotten rid of it. But at that point, if you're still dir syncing, you're making very unsupported manual edits in Attribute Editor in Active Directory to support those objects. So, at this point, if you're willing to sever your dir sync from on-prem to the cloud, technically then you everything becomes a cloud mailbox, cloud identity, and, you don't need Exchange anymore. I think there's also some third-party providers out there as well that offer alternatives to running Exchange. I think Manage Engine might have something, but I haven't really looked into it. I mean, obviously, as a Microsoft MVP and a Microsoft partner, we're always pushing best practice into being a supported scenario.
Well, supported state is a given, right? Like you can't,
right, yeah.
You cannot in good conscience recommend that.
Right.
Even if you did it yourself, you can't recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we've certainly been hearing, at least I'd say since Ignite 2016 or something like that, that Microsoft's working on eliminating that last Exchange server. And the way they're kind of attacking this is, they're trying to eliminate the management piece, and that's great. You know, whatever solution they come up with, whether it's some kind of a write back or some kind of a multi-master model of some kind that allows you to eliminate that last Exchange server from a management standpoint, that's great. Mm-hmm. I think the bigger issue is it doesn't really address mail relay. And I think we've talked about this before, but, most organizations, or at least most security conscious organizations, they're going to limit their outbound port 25. You know, what is allowed to send out of my, 40,000 node enterprise, what is allowed to send out on port 25?
Right.
And they want that to be a very limited set of IPs to some known servers, known exchange servers. You know, the solution we've heard up until now is, well, if you've got, you know, any device or application, just point it directly to Office 365 and allow, you know, that outbound port. And I'm like, that just seems like a nightmare to manage. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, going to your firewall guy every other week and say, hey, I need you to open this outbound port for me. And then you've got to kind of, you know, more closely manage the life cycle of that. You know, say if that, you know, that printer goes away or that device goes away, now I've got to go tell the firewall guy to shut that port back down. It's a much easier story just to say only allow Exchange out and right. point everything to Exchange on-prem and don't, as I call it, Swiss cheese your outbound firewall. So I don't feel like that has really been answered. Is like, what is my alternative to a mail relay? Do you want me to put in a postfix server? Do you want me to use an IIS box, which we've also seen suggested? Hmm. Do I just use a edge transport role exchange server? You know, if they get rid of the management piece, I would really like to see something a little bit better than edge transport, because that has no GUI based on it, but maybe just a mail relay that is a GUI only. Transport server or something like that.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting thought. But why need a GUI? Why not just have it quietly in the back end? It just needs to be monitored.
You know, certainly you could say, well, let's just use an edge transport that meets the needs.
Yeah.
I think for the GUI, it's more just for the, you know, if I have a ticket that comes into my help desk and says, hey, my mail didn't go through, what can I have my tier one help desk or tier two help desk agent do comfortably where they don't have to escalate me to find out where the mail is? And I think in a lot of cases, if I can give them a GUI, you know, it's not to say there's not help desk agents that are comfortable doing PowerShell and message trace commands.
Right.
But, you know, if I can have a quick GUI that says, hey, here's my message trace, here's why it failed, you know, then they can, you know, I think more quickly troubleshoot that and determine what the issue is. So I think I'm a fan of a GUI just so I can push those support requests farther down the queue.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's better. Definitely better. But and Hafnium just highlighted this last Exchange Server problem so much. Almost roughly this time last year, and I had a great chat with Tony about it at the time, and he certainly was all over the fact of we need to get rid of this server. This server shouldn't be here, and it's remarkable that a year later we still don't have a clear answer from Microsoft on how to do that.
Yeah, we don't, and you know, again, kind of going on my ultimate dream there of just having a mail relay server. You know, then it doesn't have to be running IIS, it doesn't need HTTPS,
yeah.
It doesn't need any of that. It's purely just, you know, port 25 mail flow at that point.
Right.
And maybe it does have a little bit of IIS if I need to run a GUI off of it. But it's something that I could easily lock down if I needed to.
Yeah.
So but, there's no client connections coming into it.
And you just can't get that anxious about having 443 open, right? Like everything has 443 open, it seems, right? Like that's his reality. But we can talk about mail security in general. I mean, Arnie's call out about DKIM and so forth. Like, I'm noticing more and more services and Exchange Online, like the DMARC and these sorts of rules, they're just not optional anymore. You people will not accept your mail if you haven't got your DNS set up correctly for mail.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when SMTP was first coined, and here we are using an acronym, but hopefully everybody knows that. It's in the very name, Simple Mail Transfer Protocol.
Right.
It's completely simple. There was, and certainly back then, you know, when this protocol was being developed and, you know, used, I mean, gosh, SMTP's been around for 50 years now, essentially.
Yeah. Predates the public internet is the best way to think of it.
Yeah, security was never a concern, right?
Yeah.
You know, obviously, bad actors have become much more sophisticated over the years, and we now have this simple mail transfer protocol, again, being simple, not having that level of security. So, you know, there's been a lot of things that we've added on to try and make it more secure. The first being, you know, okay, let's put TLS on this. Let's encrypt it with a certificate.
Right.
Or let's just get TLS on it to encrypt the connection between the two servers. The problem is that's always been very much a, you know, and we see it, right? You know, as an administrator, you have the opportunity to do forced TLS where you're saying, hey, this connection always has to have TLS. But the majority of the time, it's what we call opportunistic TLS,
right,
where the sending server says, hey, do you support TLS? To the receiving server says, hey, do you support TLS? You don't? Okay, I'll send it unencrypted. You do? Okay, great. I'll send it encrypted. Which TLS protocol do you support? Let's do that one.
As opposed to refusing the mail because you don't have TLS.
Yeah. So, you know, potentially you're allowing unencrypted still because it might say, I don't support TLS. The other issue is even if it does support TLS, that initial handshake, when you're doing that start TLS, it's sending that unencrypted. It's going to that other server and saying, hey, do you support TLS? And it's sending that unencrypted.
Right.
So that initial handshake could then still be subject to like a man-in-the-middle attack or a downgrade attack or something like that. And that's really what Dane set out to resolve. So that Dane is a it's a standard that's not just part of email.
And this is DNS-based authentication of named entities.
I'm glad you remembered that because I always struggle to remember that.
Dude, I looked it up. There's no, I looked it up. You can, yeah, you so get to say it. I get to check it. So, and I'm, it's all for Arnie all along. Yeah, DNS-based authentication of named entities.
Yeah. So that, So essentially, Dane, it's not just for SMTP. It could be for any number of things that you want to make sure that have TLS out of the gate.
Right.
But for SMTP, basically, you publish these special records in your external DNS, mm-hmm. Which are called TLSA records. And it also has a requirement that your external zone must support DNSSEC or DNS security to deliver those records to you, to also make sure that those records haven't been tampered with when you're doing your DNS request.
Right.
So what Dane essentially does is, you know, I'm a sender. Okay, I go out and check the external DNS first, assuming I support Dane. I go out and check the external sender first. Do you have a TLSA? I'm going to get that. That's a tough one. TLSA record for port 25.
Right.
Okay, you do. Great. And from there, I know that the recipient server supports TLS, and I send my communication out, and I kind of eliminate a lot of that unencrypted handshake in the middle, and it's all great. The problem with Dane is you have to be doing DNSSEC, which maybe not everybody's doing that yet, and that could be a premium feature. Maybe your external provider doesn't support that yet, or if they do, it's a price you're not willing to pay. Either way, you know, if it's something you can't accomplish today, and Microsoft's announced support for outbound support for Dane. If you can't do that today, Microsoft has another new acronym you get to learn.
Oh boy.
Which is MTA STS. And effectively, that is poor man's Dane. So if you can't do DNSSEC, you can do MTA STS, which is basically like a Dane like mechanism, does the same thing, but without having to have DNS security or DNSSEC on your environment.
And so MTA is mail transport authorization or authentication, and STS is strict transport security.
Yes. So MTA is message transport agent, usually is what we hear.
Right.
Basically MTA is just an email server. Think of it that way. And then STS is that strict protocol. So essentially where MTA STS differs a little bit, instead of placing that TLSA record, with your certificates keys up in DNS, it's just a text record that says, hey, yes, I support MTA STS. And then it points you to a web server where you have your policy listed. So it's a little bit different on the mechanism, but it also allows that it's the same kind of goal that email, that handshake is TLS from the get-go, and there's no unencrypted handshake in the beginning. The only thing that I kind of see a problem with I'm going to call MTA STS the poor man's Dane, is that initial text record, I would have to believe, is going to be unencrypted back to you.
Right.
So you've still got the possibility of while the SMTP connection itself isn't subject to a man-in-the-middle attack anymore, potentially that DNS text retrieval still is.
I don't know how you exploit that though.
Yeah. So I guess if somebody's sniffing and intercepting your DNS requests, maybe, it would be hard to do. So it's certainly adding a deterrent.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously if you can do Dane, much better off than MTA STS. That said, you can technically use both. So Office 365 has announced support for both outbound MTA STS and also Dane. You can use one or the other. You can technically use both. So whatever the receiving server supports, you could do either.
Yeah. So, I mean, the easy answer to this always is run M365 or Exchange Online, right? Because they'll do that for you.
Right.
But, I mean, Azure DNS right now doesn't support DNSSEC, and you need that for Dane.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So You're using a third-party DNS provider for your own Exchange server to get your DNS SAC to make that possible for your on-prem.
Yeah, and I think that's really what that answer was for the MTA STS. It was really the, you know, I think Microsoft looked at it and said, hey, look, the analysis is that there's a pretty steep entry point to get people into Dane. You know, not everybody has the DNSSEC to support it, yeah. or not everybody's paying for DNSSEC, or their provider doesn't offer it. So here's a solution that has a similar result that doesn't require the DNSSEC part. I'd say if you could do Dane, that's the better option.
Yeah. But I just double-checked here. The Azure feature list, Azure DNS DNSSEC support is 5 years ago, still under review. So
seems important, doesn't it?
It's extraordinary that it's been this long, like 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. And I think with some providers too, like I've got my DNS with GoDaddy, and I think that's I think you have to pay for their premium DNS to get that.
Right.
I don't think that's part of their base free DNS that you essentially get if you have a domain over there.
Yeah, which is an interesting problem all by itself, right? Like we've had this conversation before of just like, why are we paying for these security features? Like, where is the additional cost for you? But it is an interesting problem. Gareth, I got to stop for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by the SQL Server and Azure SQL Conference at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, April 5th to 7th. You've heard the SQL Q&A shows we publish on Run As twice a year from the conference. That is a microcosm of the 5 days of fantastic learning available to you from the real-world consultants and members of the SQL Server team that speak at the show. Learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately, as well as the insight into the future of SQL Server. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, working in the cloud, and exploring all the new features of the latest version of SQL Server. And if you still have questions by the end of the week, join the conference's closing session and be part of a SQL Q&A show on Run As Radio. The SQL Server and Azure SQL Conference is at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, April 5th to 7th. And go to msqlconf.com to register today, and you can use the code RUNAS to get a discount on your registration. That's at msqlconf.com, and I'll see you there. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Gareth Gudger. You can tell we haven't chatted for over a year because we're catching up on a lot of these evolving problems and interesting to see the holes in what's there and what's not in terms of how to secure these features. So is Dane kind of the end of the road? If you've got this, then your mail transport at least is secure.
Yeah, I would say that's putting you in the best possible position that you can be in at this point. I mean,
right.
I'm sure there's going to be more exploits found and more answers to those exploits. I mean, you know, that's the reason why we keep seeing those, you know, requests for comments or RFCs going, you know, gosh, what is it up to now? You know, every time we find a new problem, right, an RFC gets written. So, yeah, I mean, it's constantly evolving. Dane and STS is obviously the best thing to do to kind of answer the you know, to essentially answer, you know, your mail flow not being intercepted potentially with man in the middle attack.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you don't want to worry about those, just maybe you create a rule that everything has to be forced TLS. Obviously, not everybody's going to support that. So you'd have to highly monitor that and look for, you know, if you need to create exceptions to that policy. But that could be another policy. And I've seen customers do that before where they just say, hey, every single thing that goes out of my environment is forced TLS. And if I see any bounce backs, or where people
I'll just
can't
write
do
a nice,
it.
I'm just going to write a nice bounce email that says you need to grow up and get a real exchange, a real mail service, right? Like,
or they'll just, you know, if it's important enough, they'll drop it in as an exception. You know, customer,
yeah.
You know, vendor A, we're going to put it as an exception, but you know, then they're ensuring that most of the rest of their email is forced TLS.
Yeah.
That said, though, I mean, I'd be surprised. I mean, you look at most of those mail reports in Office 365 anymore, and the number of unencrypted messages is staggeringly low. And I would say most of the people that are sending unencrypted are probably spammers anyway.
It's poor quality email, ultimately.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It may be a legit small business person sending out their newsletter. I mean, heck, RunAs sends out a newsletter, and I do it through Constant Contact. And even I have my settings wrong, but you help me correct my settings.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Do that.
Yeah, I think that was the, oh gosh, what was it? We had to add something to, I don't know if it was in your SPF or some kind of text.
Yeah, I think it was an extension of the SPF, but it was one of those little subtle, I'm allowed to send run as email through Constant Contact. So I had to include Constant Contact in the SPF identifier. Like it's, none of this is simple, right? Trying to get all these pieces right. We haven't even got into the whole conversation around certificates on this stuff. Like, how do you feel about client-side certificates for mail or certified mail? You don't use it. Like when I get email from you, it hasn't got the little lock on it. And I don't use it either. Security folks that use that.
Yeah, that stuff's always been really hard to manage.
Yeah.
You know, any kind of SMIME or anything like that, it's always hard to manage. And I probably get more emails when somebody's used that in a broken state, because it can't, you know, it can't process the certificate chain.
Sure.
So I usually see that in more broken states than working states. So,
well, let's face it. Right now, you still can't reliably send an Outlook calendar invite to a Gmail account, right?
Yeah, I would say for any kind of certificate based stuff, I would just hold off and not do that.
Still not good enough.
Yeah, if you want to, you know, so obviously the pipe, you know, between the two servers is going to be TLS, and we've mentioned some ways to ensure that from end to end, even during the handshake.
So at least that you know that the origin email and the destinations are known, they're correct. You're not being spoofed. There's nothing hidden here.
Yeah, but if you need that extra, I would always say look at message encryption instead.
Interesting. It's a better answer than trying to use SMIME, the secure MIME mail protocol.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, even though we have the ability to control, you know, that TLS connection over to, the recipient's host or the recipient's mail server, we don't know what they're going to do with it after then.
Yeah.
So,
because what we, you know, dealing with getting into the Dane state doesn't stop a compromised email account. Your business email compromise stuff where we're sending as the boss because we've managed to pull his password or something and he's not, or, you know, somehow gotten around his MFA. If, you know, God, please use MFA. Slows things down. I just had a story at talking to an IT associate of mine where an older operator of an O365 account was being attacked. And was on the phone with him while he was being attacked. And while they're chatting, the user authorized an MFA for the attacker.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's just a sort of recognition that there's a non-trivial number of people with, when they see that prompt that says, should you allow, they just always hit yes.
They kind of get blind to it almost. So then that starts the whole argument of how many times or how often should you MFA, right? Or in what situation should you MFA?
Yeah. Well, and it brought an interesting question up. It's like, if I know an account's currently being attacked, is there a switch I can throw where my security person now has control in terms of what can be done, what can be authorized, what can't be authorized? Like it was an interesting moment, and I don't know the answers there, but you know, this issue of they're already in your mail server and sending mail as you, there's nothing we're talking about here so far that would deal with that. I didn't even know that the encrypted email would help. Well, what encrypted email options are even available for M365?
Yeah, so the message encryption certainly is not going to even help with a compromised account.
Yeah.
So, you know, as mentioned before, I have TLS to the next hop.
Right.
I can secure that. I can do message encryption, which means that, you know, if that recipient, you know, and I can set, you know, that's all now Azure Information Protection that's handling that, not really the Exchange side.
Right.
But if I specify a template that says it could just be encrypt, which means, you know, it's encrypted and the recipient can't remove that, I could also have a do not forward, which should prevent them from forwarding or printing or anything like that. But if that recipient has been compromised, there's not much I can do.
All this is
not going to help me because they're going to get in anyway, even if it is encrypted and I sent it encrypted. If it's encrypted at rest and encrypted in transit, but the target has been compromised, there's not much I can do at that point.
I appreciate this thinking, Gareth, because it tells me, worry about your transport because people are going to start blocking if you haven't got your transport set up right, and it's very exploitable. So nail that down because that's silent stealing of email. After that, focus on securing accounts, because if the account's compromised, no amount of additional protection is really going to make a difference. Getting MFA on, dealing with protecting from a compromised account support, that's arguably the more important problem. Rights management to me seems more like a larger scale, I want to manage the rights of documents with email and every other transport that might take place, the USB keys being, you know, one of the parts.
Yeah, and actually, if you have the Office 365 Advanced Message Encryption, which is the higher tier, I think you have to have like an E5 or something like that.
Right.
Then you can also set expirations. You can have that kind of like that, the old, gosh, what was it? The Mission Impossible, you know, this tape is going to self-destruct.
Yes.
You can essentially do that with Advanced Message Encryption, where you just say the users, you know, this goes encrypted and they have it till this date. Or you go in and you kind of rescind it, like you're revoking a certificate almost. You can rescind that that message.
Yeah, it's very voodoo like, and it depends on certain players. Like it has its own problem. E5s and E3s have advanced message encryption.
I think for E3 though, it has to be an add-on license. Yeah, I don't think E3 natively.
Yeah, right. Advanced compliance SKU for E3s. You are correct. But yeah, regular E5s, E5's an expensive product. No two ways about it. But, or with an add-on for E3s.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know who has those. It's awfully pricey when you start talking about thousands of seats.
Yeah, and if you're ever curious what your license gets, there's a fantastic resource that I don't know if he's a – I think he's a Microsoft guy, Aaron Dinage. Mm-hmm. He has something out there called M365 Maps, I believe, and he keeps it up to date all the time. But it's a great resource to find out exactly the differences between licensing SKUs and then also what exactly my licensing SKU gets. He has some really nice charts out there and also some really good feature matrices as well. I actually go to his site when I'm trying to look up the differences between SKUs, because I think his site is better than the Microsoft documentation.
That's funny. Yeah, the front page on m365maps.com is super simple, right? Just like that is not intimidating. Anytime you click on any of these links, there's a lot more detail underneath that link. But on the top page, you're like, I can handle this. Just he's organized in a way that it doesn't look as quite as frightening as what's underlying all of those things. But yeah, it's a great site.
Yeah. And my favorite one is he has a link there called the feature matrix. Mm-hmm. And then you could uncheck all the products you don't care about. And then it gives you basically just the columns and the rows for the products you're looking at. So if you're like, you know, I want to, you know, maybe you're like, I don't care about education. I'm not in education. I'm never going to have A licenses.
Yeah.
You know, A1, A3, A5s, what have you.
Take those
I
away.
Can take all that out.
Yeah.
I'm never going to have basic, standard, or premium. So for example, if you're just saying, I want to look at the differences between, say, an E1, an E3, and an E5, just uncheck the boxes. Mm-hmm. And now you have a dynamic table that just shows you the differences between those products. And he has links to back to each feature too, so you can read up more on it on TechNet.
Brilliant.
It's a really great site. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, no, he's definitely helpful for just sort of dealing with the licensing issue, which it really is its own topic. And in some ways, like calling this a conversation about email security is kind of unfair. We've talked about the back end security and sort of and then addressed some of the other security elements around this. Email's too big a thing to just be one simple topic for any of these kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a little bit about SPF there as well when we were talking about your constant contact.
And yes.
One of the things that I think is often overlooked, I think there's a lot of people now that know what SPFs are. They know they've got to put it in there to, you know, essentially what an SPF does is it says, you know, any IP or domain name that's in this record is allowed to send mail as me.
Right.
And that's essentially what that SPF or sender policy framework does. It says, you know, 1.1.1.1 is allowed to send mail as me, or run as radio is allowed to send mail as me. What I often see most people overlook is they only put SPF records on the domains that send mail, which is good because you want to say what's legitimate, what's not. I would recommend putting an SPF record on every single domain you own, regardless of whether or not it sends mail.
Interesting.
Because even if you don't send mail as that domain, a bad actor still will.
Right, because you don't have a policy in place. So is one of the policies you can't send email in this domain?
Yeah, so you could have an SPF record that's basically just a hard fail. Right. So it's basically a,
you know, ever SPF. See an email from this domain, it's fake. Don't touch right. it.
Yeah. So essentially you just hard fail everything.
Yeah, that sounds like good advice. That is a part of setting up DNS for any domain you should default to, and you can't send mail with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, at one point you might say, you know what, I've had this domain for years. Now I want to start sending mail as it. But if it's gained a reputation because it didn't have a policy.
And it's been exploited for ages.
Yeah, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle, getting yourself out of all kinds of blacklists and all kinds of stuff.
You know, I own the domain name guh.com, G-U-H.com. And I have owned it since the middle 90s, and it is on every spammers list. I basically own a portable DDoS attack. If I point my MX record for guh.com at you, that's millions of spam mails a month.
Oh, wow.
But if it was blacklisted in many ways for a long time, old relays, all kinds of things like that. So
it sounds like there's a good history or story behind how that domain came to be.
Yeah. I mean... Back when the beginning of being able to, you know, it's literally like 95, 96, like the beginning of public registry. And you know, guh for me is like foo. It's one of those default words. I mean, now every three-letter combination of .com is registered. So I get offers on that regularly. but it's also...
It's like, dude. Yeah, it's like, do you want all this spam?
Yeah, it's kind of a mangled domain because it's so old. But my education in blacklisting and so forth came from trying to do exactly what you're describing, cleaning up an old domain. I cleaned that domain up and got it off the list by, you know, just doing best not to block all the email. But you know what I don't have on guh.com? It's SPF record. I should do that.
Yep.
Actually, it does have one because I do send mail. I can send mail through it. So is that? But yeah, that's excellent advice. It's something I had not thought about, that I should just be, as part of my DNS configuration templates, always be putting in a nulled SPF record until we want to send mail with it.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, I mean, you know, I see a lot of email policies that, you know, message hygiene coming back in where you're looking, you know, that those incoming messages, you're trying to protect yourself from the phishing and the spam. I see a lot of people put a lot of precedence on, I need to fail more SPF and DKIM. Like if it's an SPF fail or DKIM fail, I should probably block that. Well, great, but don't make that your only factor. I mean, it doesn't take much for me to just register a domain, give it an SPF, give it a DKIM, and then start spamming from that.
Right.
You know, so I think we're definitely, you know, it's not to say that, you know, 90% of all spam or 95% of all spam is just, you know, garbage email where there's no SPF record. But I feel like if there's going to be like an advanced phishing or spear phishing attack where maybe I register a domain that looks close to somebody that I'm trying to spear phish.
Right.
I'll just, you know, maybe it doesn't take me more than 10 seconds to start doing SPF and DKIM and make it look even more legitimate to make my spearfish look valid and get through. So, when you're doing inbound, definitely make sure that you're looking for more factors of whether it passed SPF or not and DKIM and some of these other advanced checks that you can do. Because you can't just rely on that alone.
Nope.
You know, they're just getting more advanced.
Yeah, they're getting cleverer. And we have to get cleverer too. Or just run it all in Exchange Online.
And that is a common attack we see is that, you know, oh, I'm going to change this M and this domain name to RN and it looks pretty close to the naked eye. Or you take a letter like, you know, a Latin letter A and switch it to a Cyrillic A and... You know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, it looks very similar. So
ugly. Yeah, that's tough. That's tough to battle when it's not your domain name. You had no control over it. It just looks like your domain name.
Yeah. And I know one of the things that companies have tried, right, is to register common misspelling domains or commonly misspelled domains, which is good. But, man, there's a lot of things that you might be registering. You know, you could be registering 100 misspellings to protect yourself.
Right.
I guess it just depends on, is that important enough that and spend that?
To spend a couple of $1,000 a year just to control those domains between the registrations and the DNS entries, right? To at least keep them legit. Right. None of that stuff is free. This shouldn't be this hard, Gareth. Or maybe it should. I don't know the answer to that. Well, friend, here we are 40 minutes in, just like that. I warned you when we started. It's like, we're going to go a while.
Yeah, there's always definitely a lot to talk about with email security. We've obviously touched a lot on, you know, transport and message encryption and some advice on how to, you know, you should be protecting all of your domains, even the ones that you're not sending mail from, because if you don't, the bad actor will.
We'll take advantage of it.
Yeah, and, you know, there's certainly always a lot. We talked about MFA. A lot of the stuff we're talking about today, you know, at the end of the day, you very much have to protect your identity and your accounts. So,
And of your organization as well.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how much encryption I might put on the email for that user to see. If that user's been compromised, that encryption isn't going to mean anything, because that identity was trusted to have that encryption. So,
making the email more credible with all of those protections. And it's been exploited anyway. So here we are.
Yeah. When we run projects, the first step is always what we call protect the identity.
Yeah.
And that's the first piece. I mean, before any Office 365 workload be moved up, whether that's Exchange, SharePoint, Teams, what have you, you've got to protect the identities first. You know, whether it be, you know, a combination of MFA, conditional access policies, you have it. You've got to get the security has got to be solid before you move any data up there.
Absolutely. Hey, great to have you back on the show, friend. And check out the blog at supertechboy.com.
Thanks for having me, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.